Friends, if you've been following Beyond Trauma, you know we believe in evidence-based recommendations. Well, the evidence shows that better sleep promotes better health outcomes in every other area of life. So how do we fix our sleep? One of the best ways we can fix our sleep is sleeping cooler, and I found a product that can really help us do that. Cozy Earth bamboo sheets are made from Vicos from bamboo. They wick away heat, helping you to sleep cooler. This promotes the release of melatonin and leads to faster falling asleep and improved sleep quality. Like our guest expert will tell you, your bedroom should be like a cave, and these sheets do it. Plus, friends, they feel luxury. Since getting my Cozy Earth sheets, I want to get into bed sooner, cuddle up, unwind, read, and enjoy my space. I feel like I'm treating myself by being in bed, and winding down before bedtime is what we need to sleep well. Cozy Earth offers a 100-night sleep trial. Try these sheets during these hot days of summer. If you're not in love, return them hassle-free. But trust me, you won't want to. And they come with a 10-year warranty. That's a decade of cool, quality sleep. Upgrade your summer. Go to CozyEarth.com now and use code LARALAND for 40% off best-selling temperature-regulating sheets, apparel, and more. Trust me, you will feel the difference the very first night. And if you're sharing a bed with someone, they're going to feel more comfortable too. Sleep cooler, lounge lighter, stay cozy. I'm Lara Land, somatic coach and yoga teacher trainer, and this is the Beyond Trauma podcast. What a couple of years we have had. The challenges continue to grow, and more of us are experiencing some level of traumatic stress. My commitment here is to bring you the most up-to-date insights on exactly how trauma affects our mind-body-spirit system, and how we can work with our bodies to soften its impacts. You will be hearing from trauma survivors and researchers, and together, we are going to incorporate what they have to teach us to heal ourselves and promote the well-being of all those around us. Here we go. Beyond Trauma listeners, did you know you can always start over? Giving myself permission to begin again at any moment has allowed me to constantly evolve, and it's a tool I use with all of my coaching clients. It's also the premise of my first book, My Bliss Book. My Bliss Book is an undated life purpose planner that comes with an automated coaching program sent directly to your inbox biweekly when you enroll using the secret URL found inside the book. You will receive my creative visualization meditation, encouraging you to move beyond social programming and self-imposed limitations and into visualizing your truest, most honest vision for your own unique life. Then using my Bliss Book, you will work backwards to develop actionable steps to meet goals throughout the year that take you towards your big vision. Have a habit of buying pretty planners and putting them down before they're finished? Not a problem. My bi-weekly emails provide just the nudge needed to pick up your planner again. And if you miss a few days, you don't waste your book. The book is undated, so you can always start again. My Bliss Book is available off my site, laraland.us, and is now 20% off for my podcast listeners with code STARTAGAIN. But hurry, this discount won't run forever. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Welcome to the final official episode of our series on what happens in the bedroom. Save the best for last, or the sexiest for last. Today we have an episode on sex and intimacy. This conversation is full of information for both trauma survivors and folks who don't identify as trauma survivors. It's for couples, it's for individuals interested in how do I look at sex and intimacy in my life? What is a healthy way to look at that? How do I imagine that with my partner? What if I do if I'm getting stuck, if I'm getting triggered, if I'm, you know, if I'm thinking of other things? How to have a healthy sexual, intimate partnership with yourself, with your partner. We talk about a lot. Things that you can implement immediately to switch the tone, switch the vibe. There's a lot in here. This is one, and I think I've not said this. You will want to listen to a few times, like take notes, because there's some stuff I don't explicitly say this is a tip, but if you listen to Wendy talk, you will be like, oh yeah, she's saying something here. There's something energetically that I can shift that's going to make a meaningful difference in my relationship to sex. So Wendy Maltz is an internationally recognized sex therapist. She's a legend. She's an author, a speaker. She has more than 35 years of experience treating sex and intimacy concerns. She authored many highly acclaimed sexuality books, including the recovery classic, The Sexual Healing Journey, a guide for survivors of sexual abuse, as well as Private Thoughts, Exploring the Power of Women's Sexual Fantasies, and The Porn Trap, The Essential Guide to Overcoming Problems Caused by Pornography. Wendy's popular educational website, healthysex.com, provides free articles, videos, and other resources to help people overcome sexual problems and develop skills for love-based sexual intimacy. We are so lucky to have gotten her on the pod. I know you're going to enjoy this. Please, folks, if you listen to this, if you learn something, let us know, write a review, not just the 5 stars that I know you're going to give us, but a few lines about why you love this podcast, and send it to someone who could use it. Send it to your partner. Send it to your friend who's struggling. This is a good one. Here we go. Wendy Maltz, thank you for being here. I'm a fan and I am very, very excited to ask you a bunch of questions.
Yeah, I'm very happy to be here, Laura.
We are doing a series right now on things that happen in the bedroom. So we have an episode on sleep, an episode on dream interpretation from a clinical perspective, and now this episode, very importantly, on intimacy and sex. Following trauma, I also want to maybe speak to, for folks who don't identify as trauma survivors, but, you know, normal stressors that can come up between couples and cause issues as far as intimacy. I think this is an important topic for so many people.
Definitely.
So maybe we can start with just some basics. Like, what are some of the basic issues that you've come across or challenges for folks who have been through trauma and they want to be in an intimate partnership, or maybe they've been in one for a while? Because this was something coming through my mind as I was reading your book, like, but maybe they hit a block when it gets too close.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what I'll do is start a little bit to introduce myself to people who are listening. So I'm Wendy Maltz, and I have been a sex therapist since the early 1980s, if you can believe it. So that's a very long time. My training's as a clinical social worker. I retired back about almost 10 years ago now, but I had a really booming practice, and I trained nationally and internationally and wrote quite a number of books on sexuality and sexual intimacy. And my website is healthysex.com. It's filled with a ton of information, all free and very helpful for this topic that we're talking about today, because it goes through and discusses sex and love and how and communication. There's information on for help for people who are survivors of sexual abuse and for people struggling with difficulties due to too much pornography exposure. And then I have a whole section on sexual fantasies. I know you said you were doing a whole series on what goes on in the bedroom, and sexual fantasies sometimes can be added to that list you had.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of different from sexual dreams.
But, yeah, and I want to get to that at a point, because I want to talk about sexual fantasies and kinks, which sometimes can come out of trauma, and, you know, what you have seen and what you feel like some of those, the gray line is there, because it seems like there can be a connection there where people reimagine things that they've gone through and they become kinks for them. And is that healthy? Is that not healthy? And there's so many things I want to ask you.
Yeah, definitely. So I worked as a therapist for like 35, 40 years and with couples and individuals and with dealing with all types of problems. I think and my work, I'm most known for the book, The Sexual Healing Journey, which is the one you were referring to. And it's a guide for survivors of sexual abuse. And then I did books, The Porn Trap, with my husband, Larry. He's also a therapist, also retired. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of canoeing now.
Very good.
Then a book on understanding sexual fantasies and some poetry anthologies, et cetera, et cetera. And a video that's on my website called Relearning Touch. And these are techniques for survivors, but also in general. Sexuality, it's always interested me from the time I was young. And I think it's a dynamic part of who we are as human beings. And it's the pleasure you can get from the experience of nurturing and touch, as well as from orgasm. Those are some of the most exquisite and heightened pleasures that human beings are capable of. And it's very profound. Mm. Our sexuality is a core aspect of who each one of us is. Now, our sexuality is very influenced by the culture we grow up in and the early experiences that we have when we're introduced to sexual feeling and sensation. Now, of course, you have the internet being a huge influence that it wasn't for most of the years I was practicing. But the influence, not just of pornography, but just in general of how people should look and talk and all. What's been really interesting, Laura, is even though we have come a long way in being able to talk more about sexuality more openly, people still have difficulty with this subject. Yeah. And couples in their intimate relationships have difficulty talking about their likes and dislikes and asking for things and declining things in a way that's healthy and positive to future growth for the couple.
Well, it's interesting, like the kids these days are really, there's two things that are coming up for me, and I'm curious what you're seeing as the generations have changed. Like, A, we know the kids right now are having less sex, and maybe that's because they're spending so much time on the internet. They're also doing more with consent. Like, is it okay to touch you here? Is it okay to touch you there? And then there's like the, my generation, that wasn't so big. And there, I think in my generation, there's an idea of like talking about it isn't sexy. So like, how do you talk to your partner, about those things? And sometimes they, some partners kind of don't talk about it. You ruin the moment or turn away or like, what do you do if two, if each of you is different in like talking turns one on, but turns one off?
Well, communicating about sex is a whole area. I often recommend people talk about talking about sex before they talk about sex.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, how do you feel about talking about sex? And being aware that it's a difficult topic for a partner, and say, thinking of what are ways to present concerns that don't put your partner down. To acknowledge together that talking about sex is difficult, what might be some parameters. If you say things like, I enjoy being touched this way, as opposed to you never touch me right or something, and take some time to actually think about being able to communicate in ways that can move things forward in a positive direction. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole list of guidelines on sexual communication that that is at healthysex.com and in the books that I've written. And there are lots of other sources, you know, if you good skills for sexual communication, but to actually practice those and discuss those and to acknowledge that you're both human and you're imperfect. We're all imperfect. And, you know, and to be able to reinforce the things that you really like about your partner and that you like about your partner sexually, their smell, maybe their the way they touch, the way they approach, or the power that they have in their sexuality. So
strengths-based.
Strength-based, definitely.
So maybe focus more on what you like, especially I think, I don't want to generalize too much, but, you know, women, sometimes we can say, well, like, we want to fix things, we want to make it better. Like, maybe, like, focus on what he's doing right.
Right. And it's not a performance thing. Sex is about human bonding. When you do it with a partner, it's about self-pleasure and enjoyment of this incredible kind of energy that is everywhere in nature. A storm, it starts slowly with some rain and then it builds and there's a climax to it. A wave goes up and reaches a peak and then calms down. And our bodies are capable of this kind of really profound kind of life experience. And so being aware that, you know, what is having a focus of what does sex mean to you? Where do you want it to go in your life? You don't have to just act out what you've seen in a movie or on TV or read in a book. That's somebody else's sexuality. Think in terms of who you are and what does touch mean to you? And what does sharing, what do you want to communicate when you touch a partner intimately? What would you like to experience when you allow your body to be shared with another person or experienced on your own? What do you want that? What do you want to communicate to yourself or to a partner and receive? And then be working, if you're in a couple relationship, be working towards strengthening this vision of what you want your sexuality to be together.
Wow. No. That I haven't heard that. I love that.
Yeah. I've been with my husband. I had a rough early years before we met in my early 20s. So, you know, having lots of experience and some of it when I was feeling good about myself and unfortunately some of it when I wasn't. But I met my husband, Larry, at a centering workshop, and it involved a massage too. This was Berkeley, California in the early 1970s.
Love
so if you're thinking hippies and all that, yay, you know, that's what we were, flower children and free love. But we did this one exercise together where we stood facing each other, putting our right hands together, and then we made a circle together, like we were on the outside of a record when it was going on a record player, and pushing and then leaning back to receive and pushing in a circle. And I think there was something that I sensed about him, like, this guy is really cool. We were able to get it and get a flow going of kind of giving and receiving together. And I think that was when we both recognized, hey, this other person is really cool. Getting a little, you know, touched by it. So we've been together for 50 years or whatever, and we're in our 70s now. And that kind of sense of connection that we had, ability to communicate and change the way we were moving in order to get to create this circle together. So that was coming from a background where I did experience sexual abuse, some. This was a radical kind of whole new concept of relating.
Trusting, touch, trusting.
And trusting and mutuality, equality, trust, consent, it's all there in that on a physical level. And so it, you know, I think to be intentional around sexuality is important. To be sensitive to a partner is very important. And the work that I did with survivors, which kind of got me into international recognition through the sexual healing journey, that was all about, I was getting training as a sex therapist. And I noticed that the sex therapy techniques did not work with survivors. The survivors would balk at doing them. Or when they do them, they would just be kind of checked out.
Yeah.
And not getting things out of it. And so I recognized that there was a need for a whole different approach to sexuality. So this kind of things I was learning in centering workshops, learning by doing yoga. I started a yoga practice. Larry did too back then. Mm. And where you're learning to be in your body and breathe and relax and be aware. All those wonderful skills that sometimes we missed out on if we were harmed at an earlier time or didn't get enough practice with, and that you can reinforce in breathing and being able to open the sphincters and being able to have boundaries and all those things. They went into informing all the interventions that I developed and all. So it was really interesting. I listened to a podcast that you were interviewed on, I think with a woman named Marion. Is that right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And you were talking about stress and yoga, and you had the word agency that you were mentioning, that survivors of sexual abuse need agents to have agency in their experience of doing a yoga practice.
Yeah.
And not just be talked to by an authoritarian or put into little cookie cutter scripts of how they should move and when,
but
being able to be there on a deeper level. And I had taken some notes of things I wanted to be able to share. And I have the word agency that I had written and underlined several times, and it's self-determination, and to mention, you know, with you today. And so it was so amazing to hear you bringing up agency as, you know, that you have found in your work as being so important.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're bringing up some important points where we're really in sync, listening, you know, reawakening the information that the body is giving you, which for many reasons, whether it's abuse or societal or family norms, sometimes that can get cut off. That's not helpful to feel that right now. So we do our body does an amazing thing to help us survive, cuts that off. And this amazing thing that it does for us later on is no longer serving us. And I think that's one of the hardest things, is to let go of a real coping mechanism that had such a valuable place in life. And to just acknowledge, like, thank you, body, for cutting that off when I didn't want to feel, I couldn't feel, it wasn't good to feel, and now I'm ready. That's a big step. And a lot of the breathing and in the yoga and the somatic work and like letting the wave of feeling like pass through and being able to handle building capacity for sensation and being with a partner who is going to be with you and let you like back away. And a lot of my work, I also talk about pendulation coming in and coming out. You're nodding. So yeah, to ride those waves, right?
It's the same thing. And these are the skills that people need so much to overcome a trauma, and to also, from experiences of trauma, to approach the sexual aspects of their being and share and experience. Yeah, so those are so critical. You talk about also kind of a hypervigilant versus kind of shut down and cut off. I've talked about compulsive and withdrawn in sex. But they're both two sides of the same kind of coin or whatever experience, because it has to do with not really being there in, with your, either you don't show up or you show up in this manic way or whatever. And so it's learning how to be calm and present and breathing and movements, even Tai Chi. I mean, yoga can be similar where you move from one posture to another, and or you integrate a lot of breath work. But I've also taken Tai Chi, and it's so, you know, it's like this moving meditation.
Yeah.
And that can do it. And I do a lot of dance also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just getting back in the body.
To be back in, find ways to be back in your body. For some people, it is sports. Although that can get into that kind of like power, domination, winning kind of thing. And that's not, I mean, everybody has their own in on sex. Maybe that's somebody's stuff, you know, but, and they find their most pleasure there. But I guess for me personally, and in terms of what I've seen in terms of people healing from trauma, it's to at least have an ability or develop the capacity to have as an option, being able to slow down and be present and have a flow with yourself or with another person that's organic and not prescribed or stereotyped.
Because there could be this way in talking about agency where we could overcompensate. Like if we're maybe so afraid of being a victim again that we become like the so dominant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the control, it's not all of a sudden becoming the person who controls your partner. You don't just flip into a perpetrator role, you know, kind of thing. It's like you, it's control is being in control of yourself. So you can say, you know, I'm not really that comfortable with what we're doing right now. Or, you know, I really need to take a few minutes here to stop, or, you know, or checking in with your partner and saying, how are you doing? And it's that being able to have options and exercise your own, act on your own self-awareness. Abuse is when bodies are turned into objects. We feel we become an object, and then later we might feel we're damaged goods or something. And it's like losing that humanity, losing your own personhood and power. I've the main word when people ask me if you could boil down sexual healing from abuse into one word, I always said it, the word is empowerment, because abuse is when your personal power was ripped away from you. You were denied it. You weren't given that ability to control the experience you were in. So it's not you take control of the partner. The partner has agency too in real healthy, good sexual experiences. Both people are feeling powerful, and both people feel they can communicate their needs and wants, and or just their, you know, enjoyment of what's going on.
Can you speak a little to we mentioned the word hypervigilance before, where, you know, someone is easily triggered by touch. Maybe they're in the moment with their partner and then they just get triggered by something their partner does. Do you have some tools for how to kind of relax the nervous system and re-engage?
Yes. The book, The Sexual Healing Journey, has a whole chapter on automatic reactions. And I think one of the first things is you stop and you recognize you're having a reaction. And when you do that, you're, you know, bringing some consciousness in and you're validating yourself that, you know, these things happen. If you were harmed in the past, it makes sense that like a similar kind of touch or something might come up that triggers a thought or an association, conscious or unconscious, to the abuse. And you might not even see the direct connection of what it is. Like some people say, I don't know why I got triggered, you know, and other people know exactly why they got triggered. And there's a whole exercise on identifying triggers, too. And the more you become conscious of your experience, the more you can deal with it effectively and also avoid it, you know, avoid negative reactions. But so it has to do with becoming aware, stop, giving yourself permission to stop. That can be hard. People go, oh, I don't want to, what am I supposed to do? You know, knock on my partner's shoulder and say, actually, you know, they're peeking out or whatever. They're moving up into more and more enjoyment. You're going, knock, knock. This is not working for me.
Yes. And yet we have to. That is hard. That is like,
it's really hard to do that. But if partners are educated and they are sort of like, oh, it's more like a little kid knocking on, you know, one of your children knocking on the bedroom door in the middle of a passionate moment. You have to, as parents, you learn, you just go, oh, screw it. Okay, this is one of those times when the experience is a bit blown. But partners can do get good at being able to, like, more like, well, thanks for letting me know. I don't want to be doing something or experiencing something when you're really uncomfortable. And so you stop and you learn to calm yourself with breathing. You do become, well, there are ways where you help yourself be present in the present moment. That was then, that stuff that came up, that was in the past. Now I'm here. And there was one woman that I worked with, and she would make a little sticky note that she put on her bedpost, the bed backing, a bedboard, and she would look up at it if she started to feel she was going to have a reaction, and it said, I am XYZ years old, you know, and my partner cares about me. I'm in a loving relationship, or I can speak up. And she just had these little cues for herself of ways to empower herself in those times of the reactions. And then you move forward with in a new way. It's sort of like, gee, I think it was the way you started to pull my hair that got me or something. And and it's like, could we rewind and go, you know, start again where, and if you want to grab me, here's a place you can grab me that
love
feels
that.
Comfortable.
Love that.
So you use your creativity and your thinking to move forward in a way that honors your own reactions and that you find personally empowering.
Now that we're talking about sleep, I want to tell you about my new nighttime routine. Some of you know I have a killer morning routine, but I have to admit that when the willpower goes toward the end of the day, my nighttime routine has not been on point. But I've changed that, and I'm going to tell you how. I've started to take Moon Brew. Moon Brew is a magnesium-based hot cocoa. I have it every night, and it's completely changed the way I sleep. First of all, my magnesium was low on my last blood work, and I didn't realize also how disconnected I've been from real nourishing rest until Moon Brew became part of my nightly routine. If you don't know about it, it's a magnesium-based sleep aid designed to help your body and your mind wind down naturally. Not like pills, no grogginess in the morning, just cozy flavors, calming natural ingredients like chamomile, L-theanine, and other superfoods, things your body knows how to use to ease yourself into sleep. If you haven't tried Moon Brew yet, you can get 30% off your first order with code LARA30 at moonbrew.co. Try it now, and you'll also get 60-day money-back guarantee. It's the most delicious way to get better sleep. Go to moonbrew.co, that's moonbrew.co, and use code LARA30 for your 30% off.
That's the word that was coming to me, creativity and curiosity. And I think, you know, even for couples who don't identify as one of the, you know, partners is a trauma survivor, it's easy to lose that creativity as you've been with someone for a while. You think you know how to turn them on, you know how to do that wave pretty fast. And you mentioned children and life. So do you recommend like these same sort of exercises for like folks going through that, or are there others? And I guess my other question is like, you know, what if you aren't in the same mission with your sexual journey? And what if one partner like wants more sex than the other? Are there some things around your work that you can speak to some of those issues?
Yeah, I mean, it all relationship, there's going to be differences even in all people, all couples. There's no perfect match for sex. So if you think like, I think I should get rid of my partner and find a new partner, I mean, that's more in extreme circumstances where you have very, very different. One partner's really, let's say, into kink, and the other one goes, you know, kink just reminds me of abuse so much, I can't do it.
Yeah.
And you've got a big difference there. And you might be able to move a little bit, but it's never going to be maybe what each other needs in it. Or one person's into watching a lot of pornography and the other one can't stand it because it reminds them of abuse. You know, it's like some things are really difficult to solve. But most couples, you've got some differences and there's enough good and enough pleasure and enough fun that they're having with other ways. So there's people need to be flexible, but self-honoring at the same time. And yeah, I think recognizing that you're probably not ever going to have the perfect sexual relationship because you change. People go, having lived with the same partner for 50 years, I can tell you, people go through changes with their bodies change, their energies change. They go through sometimes illnesses or difficulties or need surgery or have babies. And, you know, things are going to change in flux. If the key in a relationship is the intimacy and caring for each other and really loving me, I find sex with love is the best combination because it carries you through those times. Mm. And if you know that you have a commitment, you get back to after the hip surgery's over and the recovery, you get back to what you, as much as possible, to what you, to some of the things you had done before that were really pleasurable, or you move on to new experiences that you create that are more in sync with what the present day realities are. And I think that there's a beauty in looking back and knowing that one has been on a journey with another human being and gone through the difficult times and come out the other side together and kept going with pleasurable touch in whatever way was possible. And yeah, there's something about sex, it is like it can be so reassuring that you're cared for and special. And there can be a great pleasure in giving pleasure to a partner and a partner experiencing the pleasure you're receiving from their touch.
Yeah.
So these kinds of things kind of go beyond specific acts,
mm-hmm.
or whether you want to wear a costume or not, you know. And I think they sort of create the glue that keeps people together for many years, enjoying each other in that way.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And then the other side of that, I feel like you mentioned you go canoeing with your husband. And yeah. So I wonder if it works the other way as well. It's like finding, you know, a hobby together or something that you connect on that's not sex can maybe lead to more or more pleasurable sex because you're building that.
And that's something I learned from my clients a lot was the ones that seem happiest, they had in their couple relationships, they had found some shared activities. For some couples nowadays, it's pickleball. But like Larry goes out and he plays pickleball. He's a pickleball nut. He's really good for his age, too. But I tried it and it didn't fit for me. You know,
yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I'd rather be swimming or dancing. But, you know, having hiking, we like to hike together and walk together. And yeah. We enjoy nature together and family, of course. And biking, we love biking. So there are finding things. Some, my daughter and her husband, they took up scuba diving. And you can try a number of things. Some couples, it's ballroom dancing. Or some couples, it's cooking. Some couples, it's wine tasting, you know. But finding things that fit for where you have a common, can create a common experiences together that are fun and pleasurable and grow together in that.
Yeah.
Canoeing is really interesting because when you're on a river or on a lake, when the wind comes up, you've got to trust your partner and you've got to be able to work together. There have been some times there was one time last year we found ourselves turned around and going backwards down a rushing river.
Yeah.
Terrifying. And we got ourselves turned correctly just in time to navigate away from a large tree trunk that was in the middle of the river. That could have been it for us. But it was that sinking, learning how to sink our behavior and trusting that the partner's not going to just go, I give up. you fix it.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love that canoeing example. And my husband is into canoeing. I'm not as into it as he is, but we went together. We had a similar situation where I was like super nervous and he got us out of it. And of course that was like really sexy to me. And, you know, it's something that's been resonating is like doing something together. Cause there's a way that, you know, you can get into a marriage and just be like, you're just kind of living together and like crossing paths. And my husband and I met doing yoga and that was like a big thing between us. And now our relationship to yoga is very different. Like he doesn't do a lot of yoga anymore. I do practice, but in a much lighter way. And so we're changing, which is normal, and being together through those changes and finding different and new ways to connect. Nature has been big for us as well, and hiking. But he has some things like jiu-jitsu that he's gotten into that, similar to you, I tried it. It's not my thing, but so there's things we do apart. And then it's just so important, I think, because that's what makes me feel like connected and wanting to be intimate is like that we have these other ways that we're connecting throughout the week.
Right. It's interesting as you're talking, not just what you're saying, but I noticed your hands going like this. And there's something that I often would show to couples, and it's this movement of connecting and going apart, kind of in moving up. I called it the wave of intimacy. Healthy relationships are when you have couples can differentiate and individuate. So they have their own separate beings and lives and ideas and opinions and all, and even activities and interests, but also come together and where they can be close and share and have sometimes common activities and interests. And maybe it's just family, and then be able to move apart and come together, move apart and come together, and knowing the skills for how to pull away and allow the partner to have some individuation and allow yourself to assert what you need. But then also recognize when a little too much here, and then move together. Larry's going to play pickleball in the morning tomorrow morning, but then he doesn't go to bridge club because he said he didn't want to be away from me that long.
Mm,
I like it. But we tried it for a while with him doing both in one day. And it just felt like that was going too far, because then I start getting all my individual activities and screw
that's
him.
Right. That's right. That's right. And that's a way we can turn. And, like, you're going to do your thing. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to do my thing. And, like, suddenly you're both.
Yeah.
And I love this for people who aren't watching, like, on the YouTube. You know, Wendy's just showing, like, the hands coming apart, and there's almost like a rounding, and then you kind of feel that edge. That's enough separation with my partner. And I kind of, you know, you feel together. Oh, it's been a little while. Like, recently I was like, we haven't been on a date in a while, you know, and I realized, like, we need that. And it, sometimes it's just a small thing that makes you, you know, makes me feel anyway, so much more connected again. And I see noticing that when you've, and what another thing that's nice about the individualization is you can bring new things in.
Yes. And you're a more interesting partner when you have your own personhood, and it's a more dynamic, exciting relationship. That's a very good point.
We do that. We challenge each other a lot. Like, we're like, I read about this and I read about that. And that's a lot of way that my husband and I connect. So
Yeah. I used to tell couples I saw for couples counseling, it's important, at least, especially if you're raising young children, get away together for a night at least every 2 to 3 months. And people would go, we've never had a babysitter and our kids are 5, you know, or whatever, and 7. And, you know, and it's like, that's one reason they're in the office.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. I'm a big proponent of that.
Spend the money on a nice hotel somewhere and, you know, walk on the beach rather than the therapist's office. And you can do it early on, you know, but being aware. And then you make the most of those times, of course.
I think it like a moment like that, a night away, a date, it can propel you for weeks. You know, so it has so much value beyond that night, because then, like, the connection is reestablished and the energy between you is different, you know, not just that night, but it gives you an energy.
Yeah, and this brings up the whole point about sex and good sexual relations in the bedroom. You know, when they start when you wake up in the morning and the first thing you say to each other, that is the beginning of foreplay. That's like, good morning, honey. Oh, hi, honey. How you doing? You know, that is so different than not saying a word or separating, going about your days without anything, or just grumble, you know, who's taking which kid to school or whatever.
Right.
And so be aware, it's the initial, the meeting, greetings and partings. Mm. That's part of that wave thing. How you initiate your greeting and then parting and greeting. So when you see each other, it's good, you know, it's good to see you. How was your day? Some connection. And then if you leave each other, bye, a hug, a kiss, and, or, you know, taking the moment, it's intentional caring for your good caring for your relationship.
Oh my gosh, so important.
It's huge, and it makes a difference. We do it with our animals. I don't know, for a lot of people, we'll do it with their pets. Hi, Snookums. Oh, it's so good to see you. Did you miss mommy or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
For the cat, the dog, the mother, whatever. And you pick them up and you hug them and you rub them, and then they jump away. And bye, I'll be back. But people need it too.
Yeah.
And they need the pets, the pattings and the rubbings and the touch throughout the day. And people need to be told they're special and loved all the time. And you can turn a relationship around if both people are committed to those, just those simple kinds of greetings and partings, changing the way they do that. The whole tone of the relationship can change. So
I hope people really hear that. I think that that's incredible and important advice. Just that, you know, making sure you take the time to say good morning, say goodbye before you go, really acknowledge someone when they come home. And it's just easy. It's really easy just to skip over it, you know, with life. And that's such a small change, but it's like, it's that small thing that you do many times. So it really adds up.
Yes. And smiling, you know, these simple things. We need to be smiled at. We need to smile. It can make a huge difference. I did 4 years of research on smiling. I was going to write a book on it. I've never experienced being so wowed by a human expression. Unfortunately, the book didn't get picked up, but you know, I still do a smiling meditation in the morning before my yoga. I smile at all my internal organs, and I've learned to smile. You know, I smile a lot, and people often say, "It's so good to see you, Wendy. You're always the one smiling in the room," you know. And it's like, when I see smiles, I feel better. And there is whole research and scientific information on that. And next to sex, it's very similar to sex, actually, because people come together when they smile, right? You connect through, and there's all different ways of doing it. Just like there's abusive sexuality, there's crooked smiles and cheap, deceptive smiles. And so unfortunately, it's not the learning about smiling is not the same industry for the publishers as books about sex. But the subject, there's a lot of crossover there. And you know that bonobo chimps smile when they have an orgasm?
Oh, I didn't know that.
You know, all these little tidbits.
You have so many facts about smiling.
It's like a high pleasure. They have some smile muscles like we do. Anyway, you know, they're both fun subjects that never cease to entertain.
I love that. I love that. Wendy, I'm wondering, do you take much stock in, and this might be out of your wheelhouse, I don't know why it came to my mind, but in the love languages, should we like know how our partner receives love? Because I'm just thinking about like, sometimes one part, like, I feel like I'm doing so much for you and the other one does not feel loved because really they want to be touched and you're doing all these acts for them thinking that I do so much for you and I'm showing you my love and they're not receiving it. Does that like resonate in your work, come up in your work?
Yeah, you know, that was the Five Love Languages was a book that became popular many, many years ago. And it still has a lot that I think those ideas have held up over time. But they're just like with smiling, I'm getting back to smiling, it's got to be genuine.
Yeah.
You know? And so if you know your partner likes notes and things and cards and all, but if you're just like writing a note because he or she likes the note, you know, or whatever, that doesn't work. Right. You know, I can't just smile to smile. I've got to think about what I'm happy about, you know, and so think about your partner, or, you know.
It's really embodying it.
Yeah. And I think also cutting our partners some slack too, like if your partner shows affection through doing things, then maybe bend a little and enjoy that, you know, and see the value in it. Or if your partner likes writing notes, then, you know, take a moment to really listen to the note they've written and what the meaning behind it. But it's all about getting genuine and real with each other and having that attitude of gratitude and appreciation as much as possible. None of us are perfect. And Larry and I have gone through our share of fights and things like that. But it's like, it's more that ability. Can you come back to this thread of this common commitment and intention and what you know really matters to you? Yeah. In being and what you want for your relationship.
Yeah, I love that. Like having just a common mission for your relationship. I mean, my husband and I do that. Like we'll talk about like our kind of like, what is our, and now we bring our daughter in with the family. Like what is the, you know, what are our values as a family? What are we doing as a family? But I like the idea of doing it. Like what's our sexual journey, our sexual life about? I have to ask you about when we take sex off the table and that practice and exercise and when you prescribe it, because I think this is one of the most effective things for people that are getting blocked by sex is penetration. And I wonder how often, and if you could describe to people this practice of, we're going to take penetration off the table in order to discover other parts of sex.
When you decide you're not going to have penetrative sex?
Exactly.
And just explore other ways of connecting?
Yeah.
And, you know, I used to teach graduate level sexuality courses at the University of Oregon. And one of the things like, what is sex? That was the hardest question for us as a class to figure in on. Because for some people, it's oral, some it's anal, some it's intercourse, and penetration. Is that penile penetration, or is that sex toy penetration, or is it dildo? Is it plugged in or not? Or, you know, it's like, I work with people who were disabled and they had no feeling from the neck down, and they had some of the sweetest sexual lives with their partners because they had, they still had sensations. They had redefined orgasm as certain sensations they felt or orgasmic. And, you know, I learned so much as a sex therapist. So what is sex? I think of it in terms of special, that ability to feel, to open yourself intimately to another person, if you're doing it with a partner. And it's however you define it, it's being vulnerable, it's being open, it's taking time to feel pleasure and to give and receive pleasure. And so it's kind of how you want to define it. Maybe we think in terms of some genital or sensual sensation, but that can differ from one person to another also. And I think if you do limit, like you're saying, you just say, well, we won't do penetrative sex, but then what will you do? Genital touching or rubbing, or do fingers count?
I don't
know.
Right.
You know, I mean, wait a minute, is that what kind of, you know, is that penetrative with anything bigger than 3 inches, or what are you talking about? You know, I don't know, but I think sometimes too much rules sort of misses the point.
Okay.
But it might not be bad to try something and just kind of shift. But I always think in terms of sex, it's helpful to weave things. So just same like, you know, like people say, oh, I sexually fantasize too much. Well, maybe weave in and out of fantasizing, or weave in some other types of fantasies.
Yeah.
So having a looser kind of way of approaching, rather than rigid, you know, we are not going to do this so we can experience that. Mm. It's like, maybe you spend some of the time with some new behaviors and then you do a little penetrative sex. I don't know.
It just seems like for some people, like just taking that off the table for a little while, like it takes the pressure off. Or, you know, for some folks, they feel like every time their partner touches them, if every time they touch them, it's like only because they're expecting, or it's an ask.
A certain
or,
thing.
Yeah. Then there can become this like expectation. And then it's like, yeah, I have agency. But if you were, especially if there was abuse and you're, you know, appeasing was like what you had to do, you can easily go into that appeasing mode. So there's like a lot that can happen if you only feel like your partner is like touching you because they're initiating. Mm-hmm. And so it's always felt interesting to me to like, as just a short time practice, to sort of take that pressure off and see what that could do in a relationship.
Right. Well, there's the whole intervention called the vacation from sex that is in the sexual healing journey. That's been very helpful for a lot of survivors, where you just start new with relearning touch. There's a whole series of relearning touch techniques, and that's what are shown in the video. And people take a break from sex, genital-focused, orgasm-focused sex, and they develop the skills for mutual touch and communicating, breathing, relaxing, staying present. There's a whole series of things. Some are called red light, green light. There's a hand clapping exercise. There's a magic pen. There's the hand to heart exercise is beautiful. And that's when one person has a hand on, you each have your hand on your partner's heart, and you send energy through your arm, out your hand into your partner's heart, where your partner receives that energy and then sends back energy to you, to your heart. Mm. And you just, it's like mutual meditation. You meditate, or like that circle centering exercise where you're sending and receiving, and you're just thinking of things you appreciate about your partner and positive interactions you've had and times together and while you're in this sharing state. But if you can imagine that moving into actually doing it, let's say touching each other's genitals, whoa, it takes on a whole new kind of thing. All of a sudden, the genitals are a place where you receive love and appreciation and then move it through your body and send that out, you know, through your genitals. So it's just, yeah, I think being able to expand your idea of what sex are is probably a good thing to think of. And sometimes that does involve taking a break from behaviors that are not working. It's not that they're bad. It's not that they never will be done again or anything. Mm-hmm. It's that they're at this time, this is creating more problems than moving us together. So you take a break from it, develop some new skills, come back to it. And that break can be very powerful. I think it's similar. We do it with food, don't we? I'm eating too much ice cream. I think I'll take a break from ice cream. But don't listen to me. It's summertime, right?
No, I love what you're telling us. Like, you know, don't get too formulaic.
Yeah, don't get too formulaic. Yeah. You know, like, but taking a break from certain things can be very good for moving away from addictive kind of energy or just things that aren't working.
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes you go, it isn't working for me to stay up this late. I could do it when I was younger, but it's not working anymore. And just simple things like that. So you take a break from that, but that doesn't mean you'll never stay up late if you have, you know, work that has to be done or whatever.
Right. So, just like breaking the pattern, you know, or just switching it up for a little while. It's not forever.
That's why I like yoga and Tai Chi and Qigong and river canoeing, or, you know, being out on the water, because you have that, you learn a flexible way of being in the world, which involves strength and pulling back and relaxing and calm, pushing forward and relaxing with calm. So, and those qualities in sex can make for very dynamic and mutually satisfying relations over time.
Mm, yeah, that's beautiful. I'm thinking about like engaging and allowing yes. that rhythm that I think that's been a theme of the conversation between us mm-hmm. today is, you know, it's inherent in our bodies and the way we dilate in our blood vessels and our eyes and like in the relationship coming together, moving apart. And so just as like an energetic or rhythm image that we can kind of lean into or think about. I think that's a powerful image, just that folks can take away and just think about, like, am I always leaning in? Am I always pushing hard? And like, could I add a little more of receptivity, or am I always like leaning back? Could I move a little bit more forward? And just that. Yeah.
Definitely. Two thumbs up.
I love that. Yay, I got it.
You got it. Like, but you already had it, Laura. I could tell you already have these concepts.
Well, I feel like that I've learned a lot. I mean, we could sit and talk forever. I've kept you, I think, for about an hour now. What is there's something you haven't said or we haven't talked about that you want to close with or bring into the conversation that's important to say?
You know, because there are so many techniques and that are available to people nowadays and insight that's available, I think it's a really good time to be alive in that sense, because we don't have to go to feeling powerless or hopeless. And with issues that relate to intimacy and relationship, that you can do skill building, especially if you have a partner who is as committed as you are to moving forward and growing. And that, so I guess to encourage people, don't get despondent if you're experiencing difficulties. There is help and there are ways of moving forward. And it's being willing to learn and take a few little initial movements to find those resources.
Beautiful. And maybe you can tell us again, your website and where people can find you. I know you have so many resources.
Yeah. HealthySex.com. I sort of took 50-year career and boiled it into a website. They say Websites today are more archiving because it's not as dynamic as like social media and things like that. But I have a ton of stuff archived on there. There's wonderful interviews. One with Alanis Morissette.
Oh, nice. I'm trying to get her on too, Alanis.
I'm
trying to get her on the pod, Wendy. Maybe you can help me.
Yeah, she's really done a lot of work on these kinds of issues and share work in terms of interviewing people and sharing ideas and learning. And Elizabeth Smart, she was survivor who was kidnapped and survived. And so some great interviews on there, plus tons of just concepts and principles that are key and basic to healthy sexuality. So,
yeah, I would definitely encourage anyone interested and who's listened to this, we just scratched the surface, to take a look at your website. As you said, so many resources there, your books. And thank you, Wendy, so much for your time. This has meant a ton to me. I really, really appreciate you.
Great. I appreciate what you're doing too, Laura, to help people. So it's great to talk with you.
As we buzz around the busy world, it becomes clear there are billions of paths. As we buzz around the busy world, we will appear in other people's photographs. As we speed through the centuries, we will collide and the light will bend. We will be accidentally immortalized in someone else's land.